let's talk about this a little bit. Acts chapter 1 was introduction and
replacing Judas.
Choosing the apostle. Acts chapter 2, establishment
of the church.
Of the church. Chapter 3.
The lame man.
Okay.
That sermon.
Peter's, that's right. Peter's second sermon and healing of the lame man. Chapter 4.
He got arrested.
Yeah, so here is the arrest of Peter. And chapter 5.
Ananias and Sapphira.
Okay, first sin and?
Second arrest.
Second arrest, good. Okay, chapter 6, first?
Search bus.
All right, by the way, this is group response. And so if others have just got your feet up on the desk, you know, you can participate. Let's see, chapter 7.
Stephen's
defense and?
Stoning
Stephen. Chapter 8, conversion?
Saul.
Oh, the Spartans. Spartans were converted in that.
Well, has anybody got chapter 8 yet? Conversion of?
Samaritans.
How about the Samaritans?
It's in Samaria.
Yes, the convert. There we go. Conversion of the Samaritans, chapter 8. If you missed it, write that down, because what I'd like you to do is, rather we go through and we enjoy Acts, I would want you to remember it too. And so it just kind of gives you coat hooks. Okay, I remember kind of what's in that chapter. Chapter 8 is conversion of Samaritans. Chapter 9?
Conversion of Saul.
Conversion of Saul. Chapter 10?
Cornelius.
There, conversion of Cornelius. Say it all together and it'll help you remember what's going on. Chapter 10 is conversion of Cornelius.
Peter's.
Well, by this time, Peter's got himself in trouble. Chapter 11.
Peter's defense.
Yes, here's Peter's defense. Wait a minute, it's okay. God wanted me to do that. And chapter 12, what happens in chapter 12?
Miraculous escape from prison.
Nice and loud.
Peter is arrested.
Okay, and so
Peter's a jailbreaker.
Yeah, the Peter's jailbreak. 13 and 14.
Iconium,
the first missionary journey.
There you are, at the first missionary journey. Chapter 15.
Council of Jerusalem.
The Council of Jerusalem, or the first doctrinal problem, although before it was practical, but this is a issue on doctrine. That's 15. 16, 17, and 18.
Second journey.
There you are, second journey. How cool is that? All right, we whizzed right through those. And so as we get started this evening, here we are now at the end of the second missionary journey. So it's about AD 51, and this gives you an idea of where the events happened. And so Silas is picked up there at Antioch. Where did Barnabas and John Mark travel to?
Cyprus.
Yes, they traveled to Cyprus, and then we're not known where after. So then Paul and Silas take off through Syria, which is in the northern, here's Syria up here, and Cilicia, which would have been through Tarsus's hometown. And at what city is Timothy picked up?
Lystra.
Yes, very important. If you don't have that on the tip of your tongue, write it down so I can ask it next week and you say, got it. And they can't go north, can't go south. And they pick up Luke where?
Troas.
Yes, 100%. I want everybody to know that. Or next week, you start being fined $5 for the Paul and Rocky Dairy Queen Fund. They have a vision. Paul has a vision anyhow. Two questions on that. In what city was Paul when he had the vision?
Troas.
Absolutely, Troas. I want everybody to know that. I know this is an obscure question. We've probably only done it 45 times so far. And so I want you to know that. Our Paul and Rocky's Dairy Queen Fund is going to be abundant. And so how we know that Luke is picked up in Troas is?
Parents writing we.
Yeah, the we sections. Okay, so he has the, no, here's one I don't often ask. They take off, they go by boat, they cross the Aegean Sea. What, hey, Paulette, what island navigational point do they stop at, like overnight?
Samothrace.
There you go. You get 17 points. And however, you're already in the whole 10 for not having the answers the other one, so.
I was waiting. I didn't want to hog everything.
You're at a plus 7. Just having fun. So they stop at Samothrace, that is the height of Thrace. And so here is that, you know, that province up here. And they go over to Philippi. Who do they convert in Philippi?
Jailer.
And does convert to jailer?
The Lydia.
Lydia. And who else beside Lydia and the jailer?
Their households.
Yeah, their whole family. That's right. That's what I was looking for. It's not like there's some other obscure person. And so, good enough. And they had Lydia and the jailer converted at Philippi. And so they travel then through Amphipolis and Apollonia and then down here to Thessalonica. What happens in Thessalonica? That's the value of this review.
There was a war party.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. They converted a bunch of people, went to the synagogue, maybe 3 weeks, and converted a bunch of them. And the synagogue, and so that created persecution. It'd be just like a Buddhist came in, you know, and took 25 of our people. Man, we would be upset. We'd be really agitated. And so the brethren sent away Paul and Silas by night to Berea. I think it's Silas gets down there. And where does Luke stay?
Philippi.
Ah, good for you. It is at Philippi. And I've forgotten right now who they left at Thessalonica, but maybe we can figure that out in a little bit. And so they send them to Berea. Now, what is wrong with the statement I'm about to make? The brethren in Berea were more noble because they searched the scriptures.
Daily. Than those in Thessalonica.
What is wrong with that statement? Nice and loud.
You left out the part about Thessalonica.
No, I'm just asking about Berea. And I'm saying the brethren in Berea were more noble-minded in that they searched the scriptures.
Daily.
No.
Weren't brethren yet.
There you go. There you go. There's 10 points. That I see. My point was I just kind of slip in. The brethren, well, they weren't brethren yet. They were Jews. But they had a great heart. And so as Paul's preaching about the suffering Messiah, man, wait a minute, look over here. And so what a great disposition that the individuals in Berea had. And so, but then Jews from Thessalonica come down to Berea, they're searching for Paul. So they escort Paul 500 miles apparently by waterways, but they're going with them to Athens. He gets down to Athens. I would like to know, for 11 points, the two philosophical parties that listen to Paul.
The Stoics and Epicureans.
Yes. Oh.
Yeah,
I know. You got the Epicureans and who else?
Stoic.
And the Stoics. So ones that say, you know, don't do anything good to your body, it'll become soft, and the other one is, oh man, this is the world, we should be enjoying it. And so two opposing, Republicans and Democrats. And for 20 points, name somebody that was converted in Athens.
Crispus.
Glenda?
Crispus.
That wasn't in Athens.
Aquila and Priscilla.
Joy, who is that?
Aquila and Priscilla.
Not in Athens. Damaris and some others. My point is, the reason I remember that is how few were converted in Athens. Why was Athens really not a rich field for conversion, where Lystra, Thessalonica, Philippi, Berea were?
Because it was a city full of idols.
Yeah, and here's our stuff. You know, we're the intelligentsia, we are the Illuminati, we are the elite. We'll listen to what this babbler has to say. He seems to be a proclaimer of strange gods. Basically, we just want to tell or hear some, what do you got new? So not a lot of personal conviction there. But think about this, Christians, even there were some that had a good heart. So that's worth thinking about. Now he's going to get to Corinth, and that's where he'll meet Aquila and Priscilla. Crispus will be converted and such as that. All right, good stuff.
Paul.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was curious when he said that Damaris and Dionysius were converted, and some others. Because, you know, if he came to our congregation, he said, oh, Larry and Paulette were converted, and there were others. It would, you know, kind of be dismissive.
All right, why might have Paul said it that way?
Did they become...
Those were prominent people?
Yeah, presumably prominent, leading citizens, everybody knows them. You know, if somebody's going to name a New York doctor. Yeah, Fauci, give me one more New York doctor. A woman.
Burks.
Yeah, Burks. Now, I have a friend back in Cleveland named Keith Emhoff. You say, so what? Well, so nothing. I mean, he was just a frowsy kid. He's the one that usually suggested the trouble I got into. Why doesn't everybody know his name? It just, and some others. And so that would be my guess, that he's talking about the leading people that others would know. Oh, you know Damaris and such as that. So good. Anyhow, here is just a little graphic. Let me move this out of the way. That as core, and we're going to see, this looks like, oh, that's a friendly little village. We're going to see a reconstruction of it. But just to give you the idea, so here is the farmland, the arable crops and whatnot, and you know, maybe the very wealthy landowner and the houses for the people, and you have this outer wall as it goes around. And the theater, we'll look at stadium. This didn't particularly appeal to me, but the around temple, which was in first century frequently noted architectural feature, and temple and the Acropolis, that is the hilltop, whatnot. For 40 points, what is the Greek word for marketplace?
Agora.
Yes, from which a modern psychological situation, the fear of being around people in English is borrowed from that word, and it's called what?
Agoraphobia.
Yeah, agoraphobia, agoraphobia, and so it comes from it. Anyhow, and so here's the port at Corinth and this and that. All right. Now, having said that, it gives us a feeling of as you'd come up from the port into Corinth. I mean, this is not, you know, mom and pop store. So Acts 18, 1, after this, he left Athens and went to Corinth. You know, wow. You're talking marble streets, marble colonnaded walkways. Of course, he's coming here after minimal success with the, although a little bit with the intellectuals. And of course, Corinth's known for wealth, luxury, immorality. We generally talk about, man, how rotten Corinth was. Various authors note, and this is just a side commentary, that Corinth went through an evolution and that there was a time that they were the nickname for corruption and sin and all this. But generally, that was earlier in their city reputation. And now they're just, authors suggest, they were no better, but no worse than ordinary cities. Let me ask you this. How good, when you think about Las Vegas, do you think their morals are? Where would you put them on a scale of 1 to 10?
Minus.
Yeah, put them in a minus. Now, we're going to go to other cities that, how about San Francisco? Yeah, how about New York?
Minus.
How about Seattle?
Minus.
Isn't that interesting? See, yeah, we see Las Vegas, Sin City, but man, the other major cities aren't a lot to brag about. And so it kind of just gives us a that, not saying that they were great people, they were trouble-filled, but how about Rome? Please. Okay. And so here's just ideas as Paul would be walking along, and this is just, you know, an artistic representation of what he would see. It's actually just all in ruins now. And, but, you know, temples and official buildings. And here's the feature we talk about fairly frequently as we look at the New Testament world, is virtually every major city had a theater. Well, just like today, you go into Craig, Colorado, they got a theater. I mean, it's not much of a theater, but it's a little theater. So any town of any size has them. And so you get the feeling of here's open air seating. Why don't they have a covered roof?
Aaron, they didn't need it much.
The one in Rome did.
That's right. It is the Mediterranean. It's warm. And a lot of times these posts sticking up, they would have, I'll say, banner-like strips of material to provide kind of a filtered shade, sunlight, architectural feature. And so in the various houses and whatnot in the background. And you could see how here's the floor of the amphitheater and stage right, stage left. And, you know, the actors could be coming out from the calling out to you, I'm down here and whatnot. Anyhow, so really very impressive. And since Lower Greece is a peninsula, there was a little 4-mile strip of land, and you now can go from the east, Aegean, to the west, the Adriatic side. And Nero tried to build this canal using 6,000 slaves and thought a bunch of them were Jews, but there's some rebellion he had to put down, and it got left till really almost 1900. And so Paul and the early believers would not have had this access. They had to go along the very bottom of Greece, which was, if you're sailing, extremely dangerous. So what they'd do is, before the canal was dug, they would pull up on the Aegean side, offload the boat, put it on carts, go 4 miles, reload. Laborious, but at least you had your cargo intact. Now, that hill that we noticed in Corinth, is you can see the height of it, and they really used it for a fortress. And so here's part of their last wall of defense, and here's the wall as it goes along the edge and so forth. And you could see that it was built up at one time, and how beautiful it would be, you know, anytime you're at the heights, and you can see now the farmland and the city below and so forth. So really pretty. So, all right, so we followed Paul and Silas as they've gone along through Philippi, Thessalonica, Berea, Athens, and Corinth. And I'm going to take this little picture right here because I want you to see this neck of land, and I'll blow it up and I'm going to put it here. Here's this little neck of land that you can barely see here. Here it is right there. And Corinthos is really on the western side, and the seaport on the eastern side is Cenchrea that we'll notice. And so there's the city that Paul comes to. There on the west side, Cenchrea is the port on the east side. And so this is what they had to do. If you're coming, you know, from Middle East, if you're coming from India, you could come by land. You could cross over at the little neck of water separating Europe from Asia Minor, or you could take a boat, come across all that rigmarole here. So just a note to kind of put us a little bit what they would see, this isthmus that is a neck of land with water on both sides. They had a festival there, and it really rivaled the Olympic festival. And like a lot of times, games and colleges start out religious, and then, you know, after a while, hey, we got a college, we got a sport. And but see, on early on, the trainers and directors and athletes had to swear on the altar of Poseidon they would perform their offices according to the rules. Anyhow, so and here in Corinth is where he found a Jew named Aquila, recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla. And think about this. Paul formed a friendship with this couple that lasted the rest of his life. When he writes from Rome, he cites them and how they risked their necks for him. I think that's really cool. I wanted close friendships when I was a boy, but you could never really trust the guys. Even your best friend was untrustworthy, but not once you're a Christian. Anyhow, 18:3, and because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them, for they were tent makers. And my point is, did he stay with them because they were Christians? And the answer is?
No.
No, not as far as the evidence goes. He didn't say, oh, by the way, they somehow got converted in Rome. He stayed with them because they were tent makers. And so it's they would have been converted sometime in Acts 18. It's not cited, because by Acts 19, they know enough they're the ones now taking Apollos aside and straightening him out. And so Paul stays with them because they're the same occupation and a great opportunity to convert them. Yes? Linda?
They were Jews, weren't they?
Yes. Yes.
He probably met them then at the synagogue.
That's very possible. And that would let you know why they got a great background. And it's just like when Paul went through Antioch, Iconium, Lystra, and Derbe, he's talking to, and on Pentecost, they've got a great Bible background. They just need the right identity that the suffering Messiah prophesied by Isaiah is Christ. So yes, great stuff. Now, here's another interesting thing. They don't have Jewish names. When Paul goes into the synagogue at Corinth, it doesn't seem like he takes them. What if they're not Jews? Think about that. Okay, was that Rebecca question?
Yes, but they are Jews.
Okay, tell me why. Get us on the right track.
It says they were Jews that came from Rome due to the persecution.
Okay, good.
But what I was thinking was...
A Jew named Aquila. I wonder why, maybe he is, maybe not. Oh, Paul, what you typed in there. Yes. So.
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
No, but that's what Glenda was asking about. I was weighing, I thought maybe, no. He's got to be a Jew. Luke affirms he's a Jew. We're on the right track. Okay, over to Rebecca.
Okay, it says they're not yet Christians, or it would have been mentioned instead of just citing them in the same occupation. But that's not a good proof. I mean, that's not a good, you can't make that statement definitively. He might have mentioned it, but he might not have.
I can live with that. You've just got docked another 10 points. Okay, that is actually possible, but you would think if he said, hey, and they're Christians, I just got, and they said, hey, they're shoemakers. So, and that it is possible they're Christians, because in Acts chapter 2, there were Jews from all over the place, and I think including Rome. So it's possible, but less likely. But great, and you got us on point for getting the right ethnicity.
Yeah, that Priscilla and Aquila were Latin names.
Is that a statement or a question?
Yeah, I think there were Latin names.
Either Latin means Italian or Greek, but Greek-Roman, one of the two, sure.
Well, they had spent enough time in Rome before they were sent out that they had adopted Roman names.
Or their parents were trying to fit in and gave them Roman names. So really interesting little pieces that, I'd like to know that. I'm not allowed to. All right. But good stuff. Thank you, Larry. And so he was reasoning in the synagogue every Sabbath, trying to persuade Jews and Greeks, as Paul's custom was. So we just see it every time he goes in. He starts in the city, starts with the synagogue, converts some of them. The synagogue officials get all upset and raise a ruckus, but you got the start of a church. And think why that worked in this situation. First of all, Paul could go in and speak. He was a Jew. He was a son of a Jew. What a sub-Jewish sect was he?
Pharisee.
He was a Pharisee, Acts 22 and verse 3. And he was sent by Jesus to the Jews first, and also to the Greeks. So that was his assignment. And they needed to hear what he had to say, that suffering Messiah can be identified as Christ. That went a little bit too far. And it gave him an immediate audience in a church court. So, but he's on the right track, trying to get people themselves to be on the right track. All right. But when Silas and Timothy came down from Macedonia, right here, Paul writes 1 Corinthians. So you got your Bible? Make a note. Acts 18:5, 1 Thessalonians is written here. That is going to help you. That'll keep you from being docked 17 points next week. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. You say, how do you know that? It's just smart. So smart I didn't remember that Aquila was a Jew. That's how smart I am. And when they came down, Paul began devoting himself completely to the word. So maybe, so okay, I got to give up the tent making for a while. We got some preaching to do, testifying that Jesus was the Christ, that is, that they were looking for. So here's this Thessalonian letter that he writes. And because he had recently been to Thessalonica, the Jews had gotten upset and he had gone down to Berea, and then to Corinth, and Athens, and then to Corinth. And he has to write to that young baby church. Here's some... I wasn't able to stay very long. I can stay longer in Corinth. I can stay longer yet in Ephesus, but too much persecution there. And so he had to write this letter to stabilize them, encourage them, and such as that. And so what we've looked at is, as Paul left Berea, Timothy and Silas were there, Acts 17:14. And he tells them, sends a message to them, to come meet me in Athens. So you got to take the same route that I have, and as soon as they can. Timothy, according to 1 Thessalonians 3, in fact, let's do that. Let's pause, get your Bible open, and let's look over here in... 1 Thessalonians chapter 3 and in verse 1. Because sometimes if I just say it, you know, say, oh, God, Paul said it. But when we read it ourselves, in 1 Thessalonians 3, 1, therefore, when we could endure it no longer, we thought it best to be left behind at Athens alone. And we sent Timothy, our brother and fellow worker in the gospel of Christ, to strengthen and encourage you. Who's the you he's citing in verse 2?
Thessalonians?
Yeah, there's the Thessalonians. He had to leave there under persecution. He's trying to nurture them. Paul and Paul calls Timothy and Silas to come down. He said, okay, now here's your assignment. I want you to go back up there, take this letter, and encourage him. And verse 3, so no one would be disturbed by these afflictions, for you yourselves know that we were destined for this, for indeed when we were with you, we kept telling you in advance we were going to suffer affliction, and so it has come to pass. Verse 5, for this reason, when I could endure it no longer, I sent to find out about your faith for fear that the tempter might have tempted you, lest our labor would be in vain. Look at this, verse 6. Now, Timothy has come to us from you. As Paul gets to this point in the letter, he said, guess what? Timothy is knocking at the door. Timothy just showed up. He came to Paul. Paul said, would you find out how they are? Comes back, said, okay, here's their situation. And they just get there. I'll say at this pen stroke, as Paul gets there, Timothy knocks at the door, which is really cool. As you see, here is Paul writing this Thessalonian letter. Now that, and we just cited this, now that Timothy has come to us from you, 1 Thessalonians 3:5-6. And what happened was, right here, we were just reading in Acts 18 and in verse 5. turn back over there. And 18:5, when Silas and Timothy came down from Macedonia, Paul began devoting himself completely to the word. And so they come down and said, you know, they're really good, but they got some questions. And so Paul said, okay, you take this letter. So it's just kind of cool. You can see right exactly the point when they came down. And so, but he's here trying to preach and teach at Corinth, and they've got problems. And so he said, when, here's the Jews, when they resisted and blasphemed, he shook out his garments. He said, your blood be upon your head. Why did he shake out his garments?
Act of disdain.
Yes, look, man, I don't even want the dust sticking on me. If that's how you want to be, I'm all done. For those that have tuned in late, this late afternoon, I was doing the demo on our kitchen drop-down ceiling, and man, I just covered in sheetrock. I'm just clinging to my face and my eyes and my hair. Wear goggles and earmuffs when I'm songing them. And so right before Bible class, Glenda said, don't bring them dirty clothes up here. Okay. And why, she didn't want all that tracked all over the house. And so Paul shakes out his garment, man. All right. You don't want to hear it anymore? I'm done. Your blood be on your own head. What he's saying, you're responsible for it. I tried. You didn't want to hear it. That's really similar to what Ezekiel told him in Ezekiel 3:17, that Ezekiel was told that you're a watchman. And if you tell them and they don't listen, they're responsible. But you've delivered yourself. But I've made you a watchman. And if you don't tell them, they'll die in their sins. But you're responsible. You're, wow.
That's chilling when we think about ourselves going to other people.
Yes. Yes. Are we willing just to, well, I don't know if they'd like it and they may think bad of me. Just tell them. Just tell them. So verse 7, so he departed from there and went to the house of Titus Justus, a worshiper of God. So they're blaspheming, resisting, oh, blah, blah. And whose house was next to the synagogue. He didn't go over it. He goes next door. That must have fried him. And so it is called a, he was called a worshiper of God. So he'd have been at the synagogue. And what Paul said made sense to him. And you know, sometimes the commentators will say as a Gentile half proselyte that he's described as disciple. He goes to synagogue, observes the rituals, was not yet circumcised. And now Paul's living right next door. Man, that would have sizzled their timbers. You're taking our members and you're right next door. Ah! And Crispus, the leader of the synagogue, here's the synagogue elder, believed in the Lord. Oh my goodness, it's like if Rocky was converted and becomes a Buddhist. You know, Lord Crispus, ah, I can't stand it. Their highest official is converted. And we know Paul baptized him. Why? Because he comments to the Corinthians later when he writes to them the First Corinthian letter. It just is a great, great guy. And you can build a congregation around somebody like that. And I tell people, I appreciate you Christians so much. Even today, bragging on you guys, who was talking to the contractor and then to the engineer of the dedication and selflessness and trustworthiness. And as was walking out of the building, the engineer that at first really didn't, he interacted with Corey. He wasn't interested in interacting with me. Why? Because Corey, he's a sub in relationship to Corey. I'm just Corey's customer. So But he wanted to look at the plans of the building. Oh, man. He's the engineer. He's got to write up all the stuff. Anyhow, I said, we got plans. He said, you got plans? I said, we got plans. Let me show you. He said, if you'll trust me with the plans, I will photocopy these, you know, on a big industrial size photocopier that does blueprints. And I'll give you your plans back. I'll give you a brand new copy of your plans, and I'll give you the digital representation of those plans in case your building catches on fire, you still got the plans. We said, all right, just give me your bank PIN number and the name of your dog. And but he's here in Auburn. And I smile at this, but his name is Jesse. I said, Jesse, how trustworthy are you? He said, 100%. We're walking out of the building. Larry's working along, and Larry and Rhonda were there, and just so thankful for him. And he sees Larry, and Larry's got his Navy chief hat on. And this guy said, oh, man, you know, that guy, pointing to Larry, he'd be all right, but he's in the Navy, and he's left-handed. So here's military guys noticing. I said, yeah, but he's one of the good guys. And so Acts 18:8, and many of the Corinthians, when they heard, were believing, being baptized. Isn't that interesting? In Corinth, the city with a bad reputation, really was much more responsive to the gospel. Athens, the city of intellectuals, we can't be bothered. Why? Well, intellectuals and rich usually aren't converted. They got their focus on other things. And so how about us? Are we looking for prospects among the right people? Are we fearful? Well, Paul was afraid, but he's afraid of the persecution. We're afraid that they'll frown at us. All right, Acts 18:9 and 10. And the Lord said in a vision, do not be afraid any longer, for I am with you, and no man will attack you. Christians, we need to be courageous. And interestingly, this happens two more times to the Apostle Paul. Of course, he had beaten and stoned and shipwrecked and in danger of robbers, you know, and we get somebody frown at us and stick out their tongue and we go, ooh, I've been persecuted. And in Acts chapter 27, when they were facing shipwreck. And so Acts 18:11, and he settled there, Corinth, for a year and 6 months, teaching the word of God. So a very productive harvest field. And here, make a note in your, this is the third note you're making, Acts 18:11, somewhere in this year and 6 month period is where 2 Thessalonians was written. You say, why do you say that? Well, because and it's the only missionary journey this happened in, that Paul was with Silas and Timothy at this particular point. And if you turn in your Bibles now to 2 Thessalonians, and in chapter 1 and in verse 1. Somebody read that for me.
Paul and Silas and Timothy unto the church of the Thessalonians in God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ.
Yeah, same men on the same journey. And what you find out is they had the same kind of problem. He's dealing with the second coming of Christ. He said, look. When I'm talking about the second coming, I don't mean that it's coming in 4 days. Don't quit your job and be lazy bums. He has to tell them in 2 Thessalonians 3, if you won't work, you don't eat. Get busy, raise your family, go to work. And so it's just a follow-up letter to the 1 Thessalonian letter. And he's got a year and a half, which is enough time for to send the 1 Thessalonian letter up, them read it, and, oh, but wait, maybe it means this. He said, no. You come down, tell Paul, go up with the second letter. Now, as far as the books that we have in the Bible, First and Second Thessalonians are said to be the earliest New Testament letters. Yeah. Why isn't Acts the first New Testament letter?
Well, it's not a letter.
What's that?
It's not a letter. It's not written to an individual congregation.
Oh, boy. Now, you helped us out in Aquila being a Jew. Class, what's wrong with Rebecca's statement that it's not a letter? No, it's not written to a congregation.
It's written to Theophilus.
It's written to Theophilus. Yeah, exactly. Just like the book of Luke. And so it is a letter. It is written, but... Yeah, why isn't it the first letter?
Because it's a summation of the journeys. It's a history.
And Thessalonians is written before Acts gets finished. We're just in the second missionary journey. You got to have the third missionary journey, 5 years imprisonment in Caesarea and Rome. And so Acts is written after these things happen. First and Second Thessalonians thought to be the earliest letters. What New Testament document was written before Thessalonians?
Acts 15.
Yes, there you go. The letter, just the short version, telling congregations you don't have to become a Jew and be circumcised and do animal sacrifice and keep the Sabbath and Feast of Atonement and all these kind of things. So what you're doing now is you're getting used to, okay, here's where Thessalonians was written, and we can prove that. And it had to be written before Acts, because Acts covers all three missionary journeys and 5 years imprisonment. And so it can't be then. And so... And then you're interacting with Acts 15 and the doctrinal question. So really, it's exciting because now you're using what you know to solve certain problems. Okay, Acts 18, 12, and 13. While Gallio was proconsul of Achaia or Greece. And just a flyby on this, that a proconsul, basically he's the governor, but what you want to note is he's Senate appointed. And it's done yearly. He does civil functions. He doesn't have life and death authority. And this graphic is good. He's not wearing a sword. He's not wearing military dress because he was a politician. And when your time there expired, then you were assigned some other province. All right. Having said that, Seneca, who's well known, said of his own brother, "Even those who love my brother Gallio to the utmost of their power do not love him enough." You go, huh? How about that? Seneca is a Roman philosopher, moralist, and his brother. He says, "No mortal is so sweet to any single person as he, Gallio, is to all men." Right or wrong, wow, that's high praise. And so the Jews, with one accord, rose up against Paul and brought him before the judgment seat. And so they've got a complaint. Why? He's been there a year and a half. And they were saying, "This man persuades men to worship God contrary to the law." Now, they don't hear exactly cite which law. But Gallio sees through their subterfuge because, oops, went by that a little bit fast. And he said, "Oh, Jews," you know, "if it were a matter of evil, if Paul had been a murderer, I might put up with you. But if it's questions about names and areas of religion, see to that yourself." I mean, bang, the gavel goes down. Is it? For instance, let me ask this. If you're a judge and a Muslim comes into your court, you're a municipal judge, and they're not following Mohammed's law just right because they're not eating goat meat on Friday, what would you tell them?
Take care of it yourself.
Hey, that's your problem. First of all, I'm not that religion. I'm not here as a municipal judge to solve your religious problems. Next, case dismissed, and that's what Gallio does. And look at this, verse 17, and they all took hold of Sosthenes, the leader of the synagogue, and began beating him. Apparently, he replaced Crispus as synagogue leader. And so he's trying to, you know, strut his stuff and show, hey, look, man, I'm going to show, here's how we deal with these rabble Christians come in here, try to upset us, and we'll just take it before the authorities. The authorities said, not even listening to you. And so here's the local seat for Roman authority. And that's it, man, we're not solving your religious problems. And it says, notice this, they all, various commentators say what you're talking about is the Gentile spectators. Supposedly, they're in attendance. They just kind of like the people do, sit at court. Hey, here's Judge Judy out there. Hey, and they're just indignant at the Jews' contentious and miserable spirit. You've wasted court time. Gallio's attitude. Not my business. That's your business. A couple more verses and we're done. And Paul put out to sea for Syria with Aquila and Priscilla. Where they're headed for, we find out, is Ephesus, which is on Asia Minor mainland. So he said, and in Cenchrea, Acts 18:18, he cut his hair for he had a vow. So he is in Corinth, which is on the western side of the isthmus, you can't catch a boat in Corinth to head right across the Aegean. But when he gets to Cenchrea, he has a vow, apparently a personal vow, because the Nazarite vow was an Old Testament vow you could take, but beside hair length and this and that, you had to give up grape juice. What problem would that suggest?
You couldn't take the Lord's Supper.
That eliminates the Lord's Supper. And so now here's one other thing. For 45 points, the name does not come up in Acts, but there is somebody's name that is a servant of Christ in Cenchrea, in one of the later letters, is mentioned. For 45 points, does anybody know the name? Somebody have that name? No? Turn over to the book of Romans, chapter 16. Somebody is listed, a female there, as a servant of the church in Cenchrea.
Phoebe.
Phoebe was a Christian here in this congregation. Sometime, maybe when Paul converted, maybe later that somebody else converted. But anyhow, just passing note. And so here they cross the Aegean. They go from Cenchrea over here to Ephesus. And has Paul been to Ephesus on first missionary journey?
No,
not on the first missionary journey. Has he been there yet on the second missionary journey prior to this landing?
Yes.
No.
This red line is the second missionary journey where he goes through Troas, has the vision, and Luke and all this comes down. This is his first stop at Ephesus. Now, he will stay here later almost 3 years, but right now this is a short stop. And he left them there, that is Aquila and Priscilla. He entered a synagogue and reasons with the Jews, Acts 18:22, and set sail from Ephesus. So he leaves Aquila and Priscilla in Ephesus. And he lands at Caesarea Maritima, greeted the church. He went up and greeted the church and went down, notice the elevation things. And so he goes from Caesarea to Jerusalem and then finishes up at Antioch. Think what he's done. He's gone through Syria and Cilicia. He strengthened the churches, and they had elders in Acts 14:23, picked up Timothy in Lystra, went across Vision and Troas, picked up Luke, dropped off Luke in Philippi, and went down Thessalonica, and Silas and Timothy would be his messengers back and forth. A tiny little congregation in Athens, year and a half in Corinth. What ended up, started out a really rowdy, not very good congregation, but it said when they finally settled down, I mean, they were tremendous, you know, and so sometimes you got to shake out some of the wrinkles. Now, this is where we end, because this is the end of the, it's not the end of the chapter, but it's where we end rather than start third missionary journey in the next verse. I want to ask one question. When we start the third missionary journey, Paul will get over here to Ephesus on the third journey. He come back. There's a preacher there that had some goofed up doctrines. Who was the preacher in Ephesus?
Was that Apollos?
That was Apollos. And who straightened him out? That's Aquila and Priscilla. Notice who had been left in Ephesus. And so, man, it's just great. What you're now, you're getting that comfort zone of integrating what you know and solving the questions and the problems and who is left and this and that. So proud of you, young people. And we have finished up the second missionary journey. Love you guys. Thank you for joining us. A question?
Just one before we go. I was thinking about when I was going through the chapter headings, I was thinking, okay, chapter 12 is where we end with Peter and we start with Paul as the man, right?
Yeah.
So I was thinking, well, what happened to Peter? Because we just kind of left him. He went away somewhere. And so I know that the Catholics think that he went, he was in Rome because he was busy being the first pope. But do we have any knowledge of where he actually was?
Yes.
Are you going to share that?
He was in Jerusalem, busy being an apostle.
How do we know?
Acts 15, when Paul gets back there, Peter's there in Jerusalem solving problems.
So
now, what I don't know, and I'm having a little fun at that point, there's nothing else biblically that says for sure. There are some references that maybe he was in Rome, you know, somebody talked about him in Babylon and so forth. And certainly there are secular references. You know, Timothy becomes the head of the church in Ephesus. And so they have all these different things. Now, Timothy was left in Ephesus eventually. And when Titus was sent to Crete. And so I'll say like the fourth missionary journey. And so... why don't you do this, Rebecca? You can look it up online. Maybe Fox's Book of Martyrs will have traditional sayings about what happened to these, you know, Thomas, Doubting Thomas ended up in India and was beheaded. And yeah, maybe, maybe not. And so, but why don't you do this? Why don't you, you can look up Fox's Book of Martyrs online, maybe even on Bible Hub, and do a little research for that. We're done with Acts for tonight, but if